welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zaro-Kopinski. This week, my guest is Bobby Pyron, whose new middle grade book, Stay, was called Timely, Important, and Truly Beautiful by Newbery Award winner Catherine Applegate. I do want to mention that this episode was recorded last month before the COVID-19 situation really changed dramatically for a lot of us. I know it can be jarring to hear a conversation from before all of this, but I think now more than ever, this is a book and a topic worthy of attention. So I hope you enjoy our conversation and that everyone's staying safe and healthy. Bobby has worked in libraries and bookstores in North Carolina, Tennessee, and Utah, and has been active in local animal rescue work for many years. She's also the author of A Pup Called Trouble, A Dog's Way Home, and Lucky Strike, among others. Bobby lives in Asheville, North Carolina, with her husband Todd and their dog Sherlock. Bobby, welcome to A Bookish Home.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Well, congratulations on Stay. It's such a wonderful book, and I see it's getting so many great reviews. I will share one I saw from Book Page that says, in a spot-on and unsentimental portrayal of homelessness, author Bobby Pyron spins an engaging, moving tale about Piper's family and an older homeless woman who suffers from bipolar disorder. Can you tell us a bit about Piper's story and Stay, and also just where the inspiration for the book came from?
Sure. So let me start with the inspiration. At the time, my husband and I were living in Park City, Utah, but we were down in Salt Lake City doing some errands, and there's a fairly large homeless population in Salt Lake. And it was a day that was, even though it was spring, it was really cold and windy. And so we had stopped at this intersection, and there was a woman standing in the intersection, an older woman. And the first thing I noticed was that she had a really thin flowered dress on. And like I said, it was really windy. And I just thought, oh my gosh, she's got to be so cold because she doesn't have a coat. And then I noticed, and she looked so desperate. She was holding up a sign asking for help. And she just looked so very desperate. But sitting next to her was this little Toto type dog. He was just sitting there by her legs, and he was looking off at the mountains, and he just looked calm as toast. I mean, he was so content, and I was struck by just the difference between how the two of them were experiencing this, and then the light changed and we moved on, but they just stuck in my mind. It really haunted me. And then not long after that, I started doing some volunteer work with an organization in Salt Lake City that helps people who are experiencing homelessness, who have pets and are living on the streets, because most shelters don't allow pets even in the winter. And through that experience, I came to really appreciate the bond that these folks have with their animals. So the more I thought about it, and the woman and the dog, they just kept haunting me. And I wanted to write a story about a family that was experiencing homelessness and an older woman and her dog. So Piper's story is not that different from, I think, a lot of people in the United States. She and her family, you know, they never had a lot of extra money on hand, but both parents worked. They always had a roof over their heads. They always had food over the table and a lot of love in their family. And then the father lost his job. And then the mother's hours were cut on her job. And then there were some medical emergencies that happened with her little brother and her grandmother. And it was through a series of these things that happened that the proverbial straw finally fell, and they found themselves homeless, living out of their car and with various relatives. And then the next thing that Piper knows, they're standing in front of a homeless shelter in a large Western city, having to be separated at that time. They do end up in a family shelter. But when she's living in the family shelter, across the street from it is a park. And there she discovers a whole different kind of family, people who live in the park with their pets. And she comes to know the dog Baby and her person Jewel. And they kind of become friends. And it's through their intertwined relationship that eventually Piper is able to help Jewel and Baby in kind of the most profound way.
I love how this is inspired by real life. And as you're talking about it, I think one of the things I loved most about the book is that it does offer kids and adults too, honestly, this window into, you know, it was this series of events that conspired, and all of a sudden they're in this situation. And I think it's very relatable and kind of shows how easily it can happen that a family could experience homelessness. And I think the other window into that I really hadn't thought of before is, yes, what does a family do or a person do if those things do happen and they are experiencing homelessness and they also have a pet that they're not willing to be parted from, understandably, and there just doesn't seem to be, at least in this story, many supports for that. And along with that, I thought it was really interesting to watch Piper. She's such an inspiring character because as she is facing all of this adversity, she turns and sort of focuses her energy on helping others, helping Baby's owner, Jewel. And there's sort of a mystery wrapped in that, trying to help them. So I feel like as a character, she's really inspiring for kids. Where did she come from?
What inspired me, so kids are always asking me when I do school visits, where do you get your ideas? And I always tell them, you know, if you pay attention, if you take your earbuds out and get your attention away from your phone or whatever device, there are innumerable story ideas all around you to inspire you. And one night after I had first started writing the first draft of Stay, I was watching the news while I was cooking supper, and it was on the national news. At the end, there was a story about a Girl Scout troop in Brooklyn, New York, that they all lived in a family shelter. And all of these girls, you know, had been through such, you know, trying and difficult times and discouraging times. But I tell you what, they were so devoted and passionate about being Girl Scouts and following the traditions and the pledges and all that. I mean, to the letter. And they did service projects. They kind of did that instead of selling cookies, but they did service projects to help other people in their neighborhood. And I was blown away. I was so inspired by those girls. And I thought, you know, this is what Piper needs, because she feels like she has had absolutely no control in her life or in the last several months, you know. And here, you know, here she has found her tribe, and here she is able to be with a group of girls who understand what she's been through and are determined still to make a difference.
Yeah, I thought that was wonderful. And that's such a nice way to put it. She really did find her tribe and felt like she could, they sort of were able to communicate things without having to say every detail, or just felt like they understood one another and there didn't have to be any pretense. I thought that was a really lovely part. And also just to be, it gave a very tangible element of the story for kids to be rooting for, that are they going to be able to raise enough money to help baby and figure out Jules' story. I thought that was just woven together so well. And I was thinking too, as I was reading, I'm always on the lookout for really wonderful like classroom read alouds or family read alouds, which I think this would be perfect for. And also for books that would be great for a parent-child book club. So if any teachers or librarians are listening, I feel like this would be such a great parent-child book club choice. It made me wonder too, as you're going, I know you do school visits and I saw on your website that you do Skype visits with classrooms, which I think is really wonderful. What kinds of reactions are you hearing from students who've read Stay?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the book came out in August, and so it's fairly new. Most of the schools that I visit, they've read some of my earlier books, but I, of course, talk about it quite a bit. And the kids, I think a lot of the kids can really relate to it, particularly the bond between Jewel and baby. You know, I always ask the kids, how many have a dog? And particularly in this part of the world, in the Southeast, everybody has a dog. And so they all raise their hands. And I say, do you think your dog would care whether you were rich or poor? And they say, no. And I say, do you think they would care if you lived on the street or in a fancy house? And they say, no. And I say, well, what matters to them? And they always say, just being together. And they can really relate to that bond. And my hope is that when they see people on the streets, you know, we in Asheville, we do have a large homeless population. They don't just look at them and think, oh, that poor dog, you know, he'd be better off with a real family or in a real home. And they understand that dog is really pretty, lives a pretty darn good life. I mean, you know, the people who are with these dogs, and that's what I really came to understand in my volunteer work. I mean, those dogs are everything. They are absolutely everything to them. A lot of times the dog, or in some cases even the cat, was the only thing keeping that person sober, or the only thing keeping that person from, and sadly in some situations, from committing suicide, because that animal loved them unconditionally. And so I think kids can really relate to that. And I think kids, you know, there are a lot of kids out there who can understand that you know, there are things that can happen. Not everybody you see who is living on the streets is there because they're an alcoholic or they're a drug user or they're mentally ill. Unfortunately, very often it's just a cascade of events that knock them into the circumstances that they're in.
Well, that leads me to two questions. First, I would love to hear more about the nonprofit that you worked with, and people who read Stay might be interested in getting involved with that somehow or donating. And then also, I think I had read in some interviews that you did quite a bit of research for Stay and about the homelessness problem in our country. And I would just love to hear a little about that process and how that informed the story.
Right. So the organization I volunteered with was called Katie's Angels. And it was just, you know, it was just a group of us that would meet at this one park in Salt Lake City. And we would load up wagons and carts with pet food and collars and leashes and blankets, and then, you know, human food and so forth. And we would gloves and scarves and hats. And we would just go around on weekends and make sure everybody was doing okay, and hand out food and so forth. But there is a national organization that I'm very passionate about called Pets of the Homeless. And it is a national nonprofit. And what they do, besides providing donation points where people can donate animal food or pet food for pets of the homeless, they also, the most important thing they do is they provide veterinary care. And that is a wonderful, wonderful organization because, you know, while the people who are living with their pets on the streets always make sure that their pets eat first, you know, if they're injured or they have a skin infection or something like that, you know, having the money to go into a veterinary clinic is very often out of the question. Yet, you know, they want to take as good a care of their four-footed best friends as they can. So when I've been doing book signings in bookstores, I've been donating $5 for every book I sign to Pets of the Homeless, because I believe in that organization so much. And then as far as the research, you know, I used to be a librarian, and so research is in my blood. I love doing research. And that's something that I emphasize when I do school visits, is that even when you're writing fiction, everything you write has to be true. And so I'm pretty OCD about doing research. So when I was researching, besides, you know, my little bit of personal experience, there were a number of books that I read. One was called My Dog Always Eats First. And I can't off the top of my head remember the author of that. But it was a nonfiction book, or actually a research book, that a professor at Berkeley had done on people in different areas of the country who are living on the streets with their pets. And that was very, very enlightening and a very important book for me in my research. And of course, you know, I did a lot of research just online. I really wanted to understand the socioeconomic conditions that can contract and come together that are causing so many, I mean, the number of families who are living in homeless shelters or living out of their cars it's truly frightening. And there has been a lot of, there have been a lot of articles recently, particularly like in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, about areas like in California, in the you know, the San Fernando Valley and so forth, San Jose, that are seeing a huge increase in families who are living out of their cars and so forth. And both parents are working, but because of the cost of rent, you know, they, even with two parents working, they still can't afford it. And that's just, that to me is so unacceptable in a country like this.
I think it can be overwhelming to sort of think about how could I, as one person, make a difference, especially if you're seeing it every day. And it's interesting. Right after I read Stay, I was reading Anne Bogle's new book, Don't Overthink It. And she talks about how in their family, they adopted this plan that every time they were driving and saw someone like holding up a sign or asking for money or someone experiencing homelessness, they would give a certain amount of money. And I guess they bought all these granola bars that they had on hand, and they would give granola bars, and that they would just like set a plan. Like, this is what we're going to do every single time. And I just thought that was interesting because I do think it can sometimes, or how you're saying you did that very tangible thing of going to this park and giving out all these supplies. I think it can sometimes feel like whatever I'm doing is just a drop in the bucket. But to that person, it makes such a big difference. And so I guess just thinking about even in this, in with Piper, her story, you know, she's focusing all her efforts on helping this one woman and her dog. And to them, that's the world, you know? So I think it's a really inspiring jumping off point for kids to be thinking about these issues and for parents too, which is why I also think it would make a great parent-child book club read. Well, it made me wonder too, were you a big reader as a kid? Were there any books that particularly stand out to you as having an impact on you growing up?
Oh yeah, I was I was a passionate reader as a kid. I was extremely shy, and so my best friends growing up were always books and dogs, and so I read voraciously. This was, you know, my mother was always telling me to go outside and get some fresh air and go outside and play because that's all I wanted to do. I think there were definitely books that had a big influence on me. Probably the first one, and I still have a copy of it, was called Casey, the Utterly Impossible Horse. And it was the first chapter book that I read on my own. And I was so, so proud. And that feeling of independence and this whole world opening up to me because now I could read on my own. There was a book that I read later in like fourth grade called The Season of Ponies. And it was this was back in the 60s, and there weren't a lot of books back then about kids who only had one parent, and especially only had one parent because the other parent had died. And my father died when I was 7. And so there were most of the books that were out there for kids my age were Pippi Longstocking, which I loved and so forth. But Season of Ponies was about a girl whose mother had died and was separated from her father and living with these aunts. And, you know, just the feeling of longing that she had, I could so relate to. And I think one of the things that book going forward in my life had such an influence was that I still, you know, even at the ripe old age of 60, whatever, I can still remember how that story made me feel just a little bit less alone in the world. And I think that's influenced the kind of writer that I want to be. A lot of my characters in my books are kind of, they're outsiders. I want that kid out there who feels like they're an outsider, who maybe feels like they're really unlucky or they're a little bit weird or whatever, a book of mine might help them feel less lonely in the world, or even just make them make sense a little bit more of what the world is and how they fit into it. So I would say those two things. Lassie Come Home, I read a million trillion times. Again, just that longing for home was something that was very important to me, and that longing for that missing part of you. And that book had a huge influence on probably one of my better known books, which is A Dog's Way Home. I always say that book is kind of a love letter to the original Lassie Come Home.
I love that. And I'll be sure to link to all of those in the show notes. When you were talking too, I think it's such a beautiful mission to have, to want your books to help a child feel less alone. And it was making me think, as a librarian, I'm also a librarian. That was one of my, I think, biggest passions, was sort of hoping that a book that I gave to a child or that they found in my library might make them feel seen or less alone. Oh, yeah. or quite the opposite, see something in a totally different light and give them a window into a life that is unlike their own. And I'm curious if being a librarian has influenced you as a writer, or just a little bit too about the path from reader to librarian to writer.
Well, so I think I first knew I wanted to be an author when I was about 9 years old. I couldn't imagine anything more wonderful than seeing your book on a library shelf. And, you know, after my father died, we were pretty poor. And books were, like I said, were extremely important to me, but we couldn't afford to buy them. So the library was really my haven. And so, you know, being able to see my book on a shelf meant the world to me, or I just thought it would be incredible. But, you know, these paths can take a very circuitous route. And, you know, I went on to college, and then I got my master's degree in library science. And always in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, you know, that I still wanted to be an author, but I also had the practical side of me. And I think that's because we were so poor when I was growing up. And I felt like I needed to have a steady paycheck and a job with benefits. And so I thought to myself at a certain point, well, if I can't be an author and write books, I want to be in a job where I'm surrounded by books. And so I became a librarian, which I think is, I mean, you know, let's face it, we both know you don't go into it for the money, but it's, I think it is the most wonderful profession out there. I mean, I can't say enough good things about my 30 plus years of being a librarian. You know, to make a difference in a person's life, even if it's just that one day, if it's, you know, helping them put their resume together so that they can apply for a job or find that that medical book that they need, or especially with kids, you know, give them a book that does help them make sense of the world, or just encourages their enjoyment of reading. So it's such a great profession. But, you know, it was always in the back of my mind, I want to write. And so when my life kind of settled down at a certain point, I started kind of fiddling around with writing picture books. And then I joined a writer's critique group. And, you know, it took about 5 years of writing and going to workshops and so forth, and submitting and getting tons of rejections. But I, you know, finally got my first book published in 2009 at almost the age of 50. So I'm definitely the definition of a late bloomer. You know, being a librarian, I think definitely has had an influence on me as a writer, because I think I have a really good sense of what kind of books connect with readers' hearts. And of course, the research aspect of it as well. So, it definitely has had a very profound and positive impact on my work as an author.
Well, I always love to hear, and I'm sure as a librarian, you have plenty. I love to hear what authors are also reading. Have there been any books that you've read lately that you've really enjoyed that you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Well, you know, I've just read Olive Again by Elizabeth Strout. I loved Olive Kittredge. And so it was wonderful to be able to spend time with Olive again. And Ann Patchett's new book, The Dutch House. I love anything that she reads. I'm reading a spectacular nonfiction book, or I'm sorry, fiction book right now that I hope will get more notice, called This Is Happiness by Neil Williams. He's an Irish author, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, kind of a slow, quiet novel about a tiny little town in Ireland when electricity finally comes to the town. And his writing is just stunning. I'm also reading Look Both Ways by Jason Reynolds. I was a huge fan of Long Way Down. I just think he's amazing. And so I'm reading that. And I'm also reading The Whispers by Greg Howard. I just did a book event with him at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville for his new book, Middle Grade is Such a Drag. And so I've just started this other book of his called The Whispers, and it's just enchanting.
Oh, that's great. You've added more to my to-be-read list. I've been wanting to read Look Both Ways for a while. I've got to push that to the top of my stack. I really like his work a lot.
He's amazing.
What are you working on now? Is there another book coming out soon or in the works?
Well, there's another book in the works. I hope it'll be out at some point, but I've finally finished a first draft. You know, when I wrote Stay, I wrote Baby's Chapters and Free Verse, and I enjoyed it so much, and I love books that are written in free verse, and I wanted to try writing a whole book that way. And I am a person who has struggled for most of my life with chronic depression. And I'm really struck by the fact that there essentially are no books out there, novels for middle graders, for grades like, you know, three and up, where the main character suffers from chronic depression. It's always the parent or a grandparent or a sibling. I mean, the YA market is just, you know, I mean, there's tons and tons of, and there's even a couple of beautiful picture books that allude to it, but there really are no middle grade books. And so I've been working on a book written in verse about an 11-year-old girl who has chronic depression and anxiety, and it just kind of follows her journey through healing in this situation. And so that one is, my agent and I are talking about revisions, and she's very, very excited about it. And I think I don't purposely write a book that I say, oh, you know, this has an important message, or it's for a neglected audience. But this is one that I do feel personally very strongly about. And if you look at the statistics and the research coming out, unfortunately, there are an awful lot of kids from grades, I mean, for ages like even 5 and 6 and up, who are really struggling with depression and anxiety and some of these other things. So again, I want these kids to feel seen and understood.
I think that's really wonderful, and that there will be a lot of readers that will really connect with that book. So I'll look forward to seeing that come out. Where could readers follow you online if they'd like to learn more or connect with you?
Well, I have a wonderful website. It's just bobbypyron.com. I'm also on Twitter, just under Bobby Pyron. I'm on Facebook. I'm sometimes on Instagram. I haven't gotten real fluent with that. But I do keep my website up to date, and that's probably the best way to keep track of what I'm doing.
So I hope that people follow you online. And I do just want to mention for Stay, for stay that I think I noticed on your website, and I mentioned how you do Skype visits. And so if there are classroom teachers or school librarians or librarians listening, I think it would be such a wonderful activity to read the book aloud or do a book club, and then potentially maybe get to Skype with you. I think that would be so much fun, and kids would really enjoy that a lot. And I just
enjoy
want...
it too. And just so that they know, I do 30-minute Skype visits for free.
That's wonderful.
Usually it's all Q&A, but I'm happy to do 30 minutes for free.
That's so wonderful. And I just think it's so valuable for kids to see that there's a real person behind the story. And I think that can be so inspiring for kids in their own creative process and belief in themselves as a writer. Well, Bobby, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. Thank you for writing this book. And I know he had talked, I'll be sure to link to some of those nonprofits that you mentioned that are helping with the pets of people who are experiencing homelessness. And I'll link to all the books that you mentioned as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head over to the show notes at abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find plenty of other great book recommendations and ideas for building a culture of reading with your family. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe and rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you get a moment, it would be so helpful if you could share this episode on social media, or if you have picked up a book that I've recommended on the blog or podcast, please let me know. You can tag me at A Bookish Home. Thanks for listening and happy readings.